free speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome on this Thursday, October the 24th, 2019. I'm David Knight, your host. Today we're going to take a look at a very important couple of updates to the James Younger case. Again, the father, Jeffrey Younger, the biological father, now divorced from the non-biological mother. James and his twin brother were products of in vitro fertilization using an egg donor, not the pediatrician mother. Now that the divorce has become bitter, evidently, she has decided that this young boy wants to be a girl. And this began before the age of three. We have a video today of young James Younger, who is 3 years old, questioning back and forth with his dad. Unbelievable when you see this video. And we had Governor Abbott, because this is all happening in Texas. We had a Texas jury. This is not just an activist Obama judge or an activist family court judge. I mean, there's a lot of Democrat control in Texas, and we're seeing more and more of it all the time, but especially up in that area, in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. But it's gone beyond the people who have the reins of power. It's gone to the jury. And actually, they do have the reins of power. Quite frankly, folks, this is a test. This is a test of the American ethics system. Will we allow this to be done to children? Will we allow an 8-year-old boy to be chemically castrated? Will we allow our children to be gaslighted by our schools, by our governments, by Hollywood? Will we allow this? Apparently, we seem to be failing the test. It remains to be seen what Governor Abbott's going to do. I mean, there's been so much outrage on Twitter and other places. Conservatives, it's a very hot story. I was covering this long time ago. We had the father in the studio talking about what was coming up. I covered it on day one. Now a lot of people picked it up. It's being picked up on social media. I've talked about it every day this week. I'm going to continue to talk about it today. And I'm going to show you that video coming up. We're also going to talk about the fact that we now have the Kurds saying that the Free Syrian Army there is their enemy. The Free Syrian Army, the FSA, said, they're ISIS. They're ISIS. But wait a minute. Wasn't it like 6 years ago that we were told by the Obama administration that FSA were our allies against ISIS? Didn't we have John McCain go and pose with the FSA? Didn't we have report after report after report here at InfoWars telling you that these moderate rebel groups were just front organizations for ISIS, that they were working with ISIS? Oh, then we were told that they were secular. They're not Islamic terrorists. Except that they were Marxist-Leninists. And whether they're Islamicist or Marxist-Leninist, they were conducting a genocide against Christians. But now everybody's melting. They got to save those Kurds. And the Kurds are now telling us that the FSA... true Islamists, not Marxist-Leninists, but they're true Islamists. You know, both of them, both groups, killing the Christians. And we have to save them. And we can't do anything about the border. And we can't bring those troops home. We got to send them to Iraq or to Saudi Arabia so we can keep our foot in the Metal East, where we have muddled in foreign policy, muddled in these ethnic wars. President Trump was right about that. These ethnic wars have been going on for centuries, centuries. It didn't start with him. Didn't start 2 weeks ago when he announced that he was going to do an America First foreign policy. I hope he does. But Mike Pompeo said, well, you know, he always says these things and then we give him the facts and he typically comes around. And I'm very concerned that he's coming around after he's been talked to by the guy who lies, cheats, steals, and has classes on it. You know, like for the president, he gives classes on that kind of stuff. We'll be right back.
In a world of deceit, Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
It's Thursday, October the 24th, year of our Lord, 2019. I'm David Knight, your host. Today, we're going to take a look at the latest developments we've had, as the Democrats would like to say, a mob invaded Schiff's little secret enclave of Democrats holding secret testimony. Oh, they're very upset about this. It is a chaotic scene, says the Associated Press, as Republicans disrupt impeachment. We have people like Steve Scalise, others going in there saying, well, we want to see what's going on. We're tired of the secret hearings. We're tired of the star chamber process. We all are, quite frankly. And as one of these Republicans said, if they can do that here, they'll be doing it to you. It's like, come on, pal, wake up. They've been doing it to us for years, for decades. They've been taking our property without finding us guilty, without even charging us with a crime under the name of the war on drugs. Civil asset forfeiture is what it's called. Explain that to Megyn Kelly. I tried to explain it to her when she was there. Totally clueless. Like a deer in the headlights. What? What? Never heard of it. Yeah, it was only started in the 1980s. Ed Meese, Reagan's attorney general. They've been doing it with CPS, still doing it with CPS, still doing it with civil asset forfeiture. Where they take your kids and they don't tell you what the charges are. And it's a secret star chamber process. Your kids are just gone. You can't find out where they are. You can't get them back. You can't find out the issue that they seem to have with you. They're taking our kids with CPS. And it just keeps going. When I talk to whistleblowers that are dissidents who don't like politics, who resist, who take action, who speak out, they get whisked away. They have a trial. Exculpatory evidence, in other words, evidence that would prove them innocent, is hidden and withheld. That's exactly what's happening with Schiff. Why would the Republicans and the president be surprised about this? They have tolerated it to whistleblowers, to political dissidents, to people who own property in this country, and to parents. To parents. What goes around comes around, doesn't it? The only surprise is that it's taken this long for this kind of injustice to reach people in the highest office. Do you think they'll do something about it? Maybe for themselves. Do you think they'll stop these systems against us? No, I don't think so. I mean, just take a look at what's going on with Julian Assange right now. But let's begin with the most important part of all of this injustice, and that is the injustice that's being done to the family. The plots to destroy the family completely. Our brave new world. You know, we have these discussions all the time about whether our society and these rapidly advancing dystopian aspects, all of them based in, you know, technology, are we becoming George Orwell's 1984, Big Brother? It's everywhere, watching everything that we do, measuring everything that we do, doling out punishments in one way or the other. We have a social credit system enacted in China, and you may not be aware of it, but it has already been enacted by our technocratic elite overlords out of Silicon Valley, people like Mark Zuckerberg, who, by the way, we've got some stuff about him as well. He was facing Congress yesterday. Some very interesting lies came out of his mouth. Some very interesting discussions back and forth about whether or not there was going to be political censorship as it is currently going on and has been going on. We were censored. You're not going to censor the free press. You're not going to censor politicians, are you? Newsflash, politicians. If you don't protect the free speech of the free press, not the corporate press, the free press, like us, and 800 others who were taken out 2 months after we were, you don't support the free press, you don't support the free speech of the people in the digital public square. That is their business model. They're not a bakery. They're not a wedding photographer. They're not you know, fill in the blank, a salon that does waxing of certain parts. No, this is their business model. Not a mall either. That's why when we look at these Supreme Court cases, you know, a mall is not a public square for free speech. But all the social media was. That's what they told everybody. We are the free speech wing of the Free Speech Party, and come on in. Everything is free, including the speech. Now, you can buy ads. We'll sell you hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of ads that they sold to the triple amputee veteran who was part of the We Build the Wall, and then they ripped him off. Ripped him off financially, ripped him off of their social media platform. They said, we have a public square here, but we own it, and we will do whatever we want. Well, we've had a Supreme Court case that was exactly like that back in 1946. It wasn't a mall. It was an actual public square. And the company said, we own the town, and you can't hand out flyers here to a Jehovah's Witness, I think it was. And she fought him to the Supreme Court, 1946, Marsh versus Alabama. She won. They said, even if the public square is privately owned, you can't censor free speech. Well, this is the public square. It's not a bakery. It's not a mall. It's not a hair salon or other types of salons. It's not a photography shop. Everybody who defended somebody imposing their preferences on other people and forcing them to do stuff are now those people who typically push for that. Said, yeah, you shut down that Christian baker if he doesn't make a custom cake. He said, well, look, I sell any kind of stuff that's off the shelf to people. I don't do anything. But do you want me to make a custom cake that violates my religion? Celebrate that? I'm not doing that. And the Supreme Court said, that's right, you don't have to. And the Supreme Court has already ruled on the public square. So we're going to have some stuff on Facebook, but I digress. I really wanted to talk about what's going on with the family. So let's get to that first. As I said, are we going to go into a George Orwell dystopia? Or are we going to have Brave New World, Aldous Huxley's novel? And as I've said many times, we have both. Both are present. If you will be content to, you know, take the Soma, the government-offered drugs out there, and they come in a number of different ways, right? They in Brave New World, the population was pacified by entertainment, by sex, and by drugs. Oh, no parallel to today's society, is there? No, not in that. You know, just take your Soma. A gram is better than a dam. That's right. You take that stuff and you just don't give a damn. 1 gram of that, you don't give a damn. That was the slogan that the government used to get people to take their Soma. Well, today we don't have that, do we? Oh, yeah, we do. We got the opioid epidemic. I just read you the story yesterday about the Daily Caller saying SSRIs, you know, we're suicide rates going up with teens. And it couldn't be the opioid epidemic. It couldn't be entertainment. It couldn't be the pressure of social media. It's got to be the fact that they're not taking their SSRIs as much. Why is that? Well, they said, as they talked to big pharmaceutical experts, they said it's because of that black box label saying that if you take this stuff because you are depressive and suicidal, it will make you more depressed and more suicidal. And if you change your dosage, that's when it gets really dangerous, the change. And as I pointed out yesterday, you've got to come off of it gradually, just like a diver who's been down deep for a while. If you come off of it too quickly, you'll get bent. And when you get bent, you commit suicide or murder-suicide. As we've seen over and over again, SSRIstories.net, the lady that I interviewed. We've got to get her back on, Travis. SSRIstories.net. And, of course, you know, there's fluoride in the water. Oh, that has the same effect as well. Right? SSRIs are essentially a form of fluoride. Not exactly the same thing, but, you know, fluoride, both of them, key ingredient there. So, yeah, we can just pacify people. And then we can use sex as entertainment. And then they can control how people reproduce. Because they don't want you reproducing naturally. That's why you have the LGBT tyranny that is being forced upon our kids. And that's why today, as we look at this, ectogenesis, artificially gestating babies. Yes, that's going to be here very soon, says the BBC. A gynecologist says, we're about 5 years away, and we'll tell you how this is going to look in just a second. Stay with us. Ectogenesis. We have these new names that are coming out all the time. You know, it wasn't just a few years ago that we heard about transgenderism for the first time. As one individual writing on Steam pointed out, his name is Tom Gilson. He said, transgenderism, the fastest growing insanity in the world. Fastest growing insanity the world has ever seen, is what he said. He said he was speaking to a group on the topics of homosexuality and transgenderism. He said, how many of you would say this has been going on for 10 years? Raise your hand. He said about half the people did. I said, well, he says, I'm gauging this off of my book, Critical Conversations, A Christian Parent's Guide to Discussing Homosexuality with Teens. It was right after the Supreme Court created a new definition for marriage in June of 2015. And he said, Bruce Jenner, in his 2015 article in July, Vanity Fair, that cover story, happened right after his book was published in June of 2015. And that was when the movement really took off. Everybody began talking about it with Bruce Jenner. And then we had the North Carolina bathroom bill, and that was March of 2016, 3 years ago. So a lot has happened in that amount of time, hasn't it? Yeah, it does seem like decades to many of us. And he went on to say the Tavistock Center in London, in the UK, the UK's publicly funded clinic treating transgender children and adolescents. They said that five clinicians, by the way, according to Daily Mail, and I've covered this story in the past, recently resigned, quote, over concerns that children were being incorrectly diagnosed with gender dysphoria. And it's not just that they are miscorrectly diagnosing them and giving them bad counseling. They are making permanent life-altering changes to these children as well. And the director of the Center of Evidence-Based Medicine at Oxford University, Carl Hennigan, said, well, given the paucity of evidence, the off-label use of drugs in gender dysphoria treatment largely means, listen to this, an unregulated live experiment on children. An unregulated live experiment on children. Now, that's what they're calling for. And I'm calling that, along with this author, evil, fast growing. This is what we're looking at here. And it's not just in the UK, where they tend to accept these things early. UK really does seem, for the most part, to have lost the culture. The government has lost any connection to reality, Western civilization, Christianity, morality, ethics, any of that. And so they're swept along by every wind of change that comes along because they have no anchor. They have no anchor. But here in Texas, where you'd expect that to happen, you know, we had this case, and now we have the governor of Texas weighing in, saying he's going to take a look at it. But before we leave this, just consider what's going on if you look at these numbers. Just looking at this Tavistock Center in London, publicly funded in the UK, and what they say is that of the children who are genuinely struggling with gender identity, at least 85% of them simply outgrow it. So let's take a look at the 2,519 children who went to the Tavistock Center last year. And let's just say that, you know, roughly a fifth. Let's round it up. Not 15%, but let's just say 20%. So we'll say, okay, that would mean about 500 children having a real struggle. As this author points out, past statistics would suggest that 15% of that group, or about 70 to 80 children, are headed toward a difficult lifelong problem with gender dysphoria. But if only 70 or 80 of those 2,519 children are headed toward lifelong gendered confusion issues, then that means that 2,440 of them, 97% of them, don't need any treatment at all except for care, counseling, and time. That is, if you agree with those treatments in the first place. But now we're moving to the point where we're not just giving bad counseling, where we're not just pushing people. As I said yesterday, you know, you look at the motives of this mother. I really simply don't understand it. The best way that I can try to understand this is a kind of sick pathology, as I said yesterday, of stage parents. People who are desperate for attention, who always wanted attention. They couldn't get it themselves. They couldn't succeed as a singer, a dancer, or whatever. They've got a kid they think's got some time, and they push that kid. Vicariously living through them. Getting attention by using their kid. I don't know. There's a divorce here. She doesn't have a biological connection to the young boy either. The father, who does have biological connection to this. I mean, you know, divorces get pretty crazy, don't they? People can do, even burn down their own future, burning up money just to try to get even with the other person that they're trying to come after. Is that a possibility? I don't know. When we look at this, we look at the coming gestation of human babies outside the womb, that a BBC interview with a gynecologist there said, well, we think it's only about 5 years away. And I think, you know, this would be for women who want to avoid the social and physical complications of pregnancy, or for gay couples or whatever, or maybe for a crazy woman pediatrician who later then gender gaslights her three-year-old. Here's a video from the father, Jeff Younger, a conversation that he had with his young son. His young son is now, I think, 7. This is a conversation that he had with his son at 3 years old. The divorce had already happened, separation. And, he's 4-year-old video. And now they're going to, at the age of 8, the ripe old age of 8, he will be mature enough that he can make this irreversible decision with the help of his mother, of course, and psychological counselors, and the schools, and the courts. He can make this life-altering decision. So let's play what this young boy had to say to his father at the age of 3. Video clip 9.
Well, you're a boy, right?
No. I'm a girl.
Who told you you're a girl?
Mommy.
When did she tell you you were a girl?
Because I love girls.
Oh, I see. So mommy told you you were a girl?
Uh-huh.
Does mommy do anything else, like with a girl with you?
Mm-hmm.
Like what?
Like dresses.
What does she do?
She do puts them on me.
She puts dresses on you? Oh, wow. And what else does she do?
She buys my headbands.
Uh-huh.
And she gets me hair clips.
Oh, hair clips? Okay. Mm-hmm. What else?
Some microphones.
What else?
Like a skeleton.
Does she do anything with your fingers?
Yeah.
What?
She paints my nails.
Why does she do that?
Because I love my nail polish.
Oh.
That is so incredibly sad. And he's got a towel wrapped around his head. Why do you have the towel wrapped around your head? Is that, that's long hair, so I can be like a girl. That was what his mother was put. Why'd she tell you you're a girl? Well, because I like girls. Oh, so that makes him a girl. All right, we'll be right back. Stay with us.
Free speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
We had to go to commercial break. We did to finish with that video that was taped 4 years ago of James Younger at the age of 3. His dad said, my 3-year-old son tells me he's at my house, visitation, because they were divorced already. He tells me he's a girl. I had the presence of mind, thank goodness, pull out my iPhone and videotape me asking him about that. It was literally the first time I really understood what was happening to my son. And so I want to go back and play some of this at the very beginning. You're a boy, right? And he goes, no, I'm a girl. Who told you you're a girl? Mommy. When did she tell you you were a girl? But he says, because I love girls. Oh, I see. So mommy told you you're a girl? Mm-hmm, he says. And he starts talking to him about all the different things that his mom does to him. Let's go back and play video clip number 9. Pick it up.
So mommy puts you in a dress and puts nail polish on you?
Mm-hmm.
And what does mommy tell you?
She tells me I'm a girl.
Oh, okay. Do you think you're a girl?
Uh-huh.
You do? Is that why you wear this, so that you can have long hair?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Isn't that sad? Isn't that sad? I pray for James. He's got a website, savejames.com. You need to pray for that boy. Pray for his father for this ordeal that they're going through, that he will be going through. There was just a story that I covered last week. A 72-year-old man who had struggled with this all of his life as a young child. He said his grandmother wanted him to be a girl and dressed him up as a girl. It created psychological problems for him all of his life. At one point, when he was middle-aged, he had a sex change operation, lived that way for a short period of time, and then said he regretted that. And he said, don't tell me these kids can make this kind of decision. And he said that went back to that point in time. He said he was sexually abused by other family members, but he was also sexually abused by his grandmother, who did that to him, which is what this young boy's non-biological mother is doing to him. It's so incredibly sad. But it's not just that family that is being tried. The real trial right now that is happening is a trial of America. You got to choose which side you're going to stand on. For the good or evil, decide. Once to every man and nation comes a moment to decide. And we're failing this test. We're failing it in a big, big way. Now, Governor Abbott tweeted out last night at about 7 o'clock. He said, FYI, the matter of the 7-year-old James Younger is being looked into by the Texas Attorney General's Office and the Texas Department of Family and Protective Services. And then he has a hashtag James Younger. Well, let's hope that they do something about it. I don't know exactly what's going to happen. But, you know, if you're not concerned about this, you don't really understand what is at stake here. I started out by talking about how we have the back and forth between the Brave New World and the George Orwell vision, those two visions of dystopia, and how they truly exist simultaneously in our society. If you will take the Soma, if you will let yourself just, you know, zone out, take the gram, don't give a damn, and then you can, they'll disconnect, you know, the world of Brave New World, which we're seeing now. Sex, love, reproduction, those are all entirely separate from each other. They're not all together in the family as God created them, as God envisioned it. No. The family is split up. Relationships are split up. Personal relationships are destroyed. You don't want to have kids who are connected to their family. Every tyrannical system of politics, going back to Plato's Republic, was designed to stop that from happening. Plato's Republic, he wanted to make sure that, you know, they would have orgies and nobody would even know. It wouldn't even be possible to know who your parents were. Your parent would be the state in Plato's Republic. And then just like Aldous Huxley, you know, you'd be stratified into the different parts of society. You know, you could be the elite or you could be the workers, you could be the military. And yet this is all coming to pass now in a way that has never been possible because of technological capabilities. You know, we look at this system, they call it ectogenesis, growing babies in labs. And at the end of this article, they say, well, you know, this could be a good thing. It could help to end abortion, they said. Because they said, you know, freedom to choose what happens to one's body is one thing, but freedom to insist on the death of another human being that is capable of living outside of one's body is completely different. And so if somebody says, well, I've got an unwanted pregnancy, okay, well, you're not going to kill that baby. We'll transfer it to an artificial womb and give that baby a chance for life. See, technology can be a two-edged sword, right? Except that how you wield that two-edged sword of technology depends on your morality. It depends on your ethics. And we have lost our morality. We have lost our ethics. And so let me tell you something. This sword is going to just be cutting both ways. Just like somebody was standing in the middle of a crowd and just slinging this thing around like some kind of a terrorist. We've seen that type of thing happen before. This is the way technology is being used because technology is being wielded by a society that doesn't have any moral or ethical principles anymore. And let me tell you something. This isn't going to save life. It's going to be used to further devalue life, to further control people. And just take a look at what is being done in preschool, for example. This is an article from Intellectual Takeout. This person says, well, I've heard C.S. Lewis's classic, The Chronicles of Narnia, accused of indoctrinating children with Christian values, with Christianity. And she says, well, my understanding is that indoctrination would teach a person or a group to accept a set of beliefs uncritically. And I believe my preschool children aged 3 and 5 are being indoctrinated at the child care center by a text called We Are All Equal. This is the favorite word of the Democrats now. Their Equality Act, which is going to erase the free exercise of religion to favor the LGB tyranny. And she said, every new page begins with, we are all equal. The first couple of pages were innocuous enough, but it wasn't long before the first political overture emerged. It was about immigration. Soon, a barrage of messages were infused with the LGB tyranny. Phrase there. We're all equal. Our love, we decide. We can get married. No love is denied. As female actor and lesbian Magda Szubanski put it, this book is, quote, a resounding yes, a reference to the yes vote campaign in Australia's plebiscite on same-sex marriage held in 2017. We're all equal. Let's shout it out loud. We share hopes and dreams. We're all equal and proud. And this is the kind of equality, she points out, that George Orwell talked about in Animal Farm. Problem is, just like on Animal Farm, some animals are more equal than others. And you'll have to bow down to those animals that are more equal than you. And this is what we have seen over and over again with the LGB tyranny. And just think about the fact that we now have these people, these Marxists, just like on Animal Farm. They are now politicizing preschoolers. And they're not telling parents. Why? Because we don't want parents. We don't want families. We want to separate sex, love, and reproduction. And then it will be controlled via technology. All right, we've got to take a break. We'll be right back. Stay with us. They got some cards they're not showing, don't they? Except they kind of showed their cards this week, didn't they, with all this stuff freaking out about President Trump using the term lynching. And he wasn't even talking about Obama's attorney general here. No, Rob Reiner, democracy is being lynched by a racist liar. It's racist to use that word, they said. Beto O'Rourke. The legacy of slavery, segregation, Jim Crow, and suppression is alive and well in every part of this country. Well, you know, that legacy, Beto, or should I say Robert Francis O'Rourke, who is the trans-Hispanic, that legacy of slavery, segregation, Jim Crow, and suppression, that's a Democrat legacy there. It was Democrats who pushed slavery, Democrats who pushed segregation and Jim Crow and suppression of voting. That was all Democrats doing that. Democrats, by the way, highly honored recently by the Democrat Party. You know, the guy out of West Virginia, Robert Byrd, open member of the Democrat Party, had Hillary Clinton. The Clintons loved him even when he, you know, wasn't that long ago that he died, and they were still honoring him and his legacy. His legacy of, let's see, what was this again? Oh, that's right, the way Beto put it. Slavery, segregation, Jim Crow, and suppression. Yeah, that legacy of Robert Byrd and many people like him in the Democrat Party. Kamala Harris. Lynching is a reprehensible stain on this nation's history. and you're using it to whitewash your corruption. Cory Booker, lynching is an act of terror used to uphold white supremacy. Is that correct? Is that really? I know Elizabeth Warren, same type of thing. They're kind of plagiarizing each other. Well, what we have coming up, here's a warning to leftists. We have a trigger alert. Real trigger. The trigger I remember when I was a kid. This was the trigger that we had. Lord Rogers and trigger. That's good. We get the idea, don't we? You know what? Lynching is a trope of Westerns, isn't it? It's not just the lynchings that were done by Democrats in the South that these people are so upset about, the Democrats today are so upset about. They get really upset about it. They like to project their crimes on other people, right? The Democrat lynching was always racially based. But out in the West, lynching was an equal opportunity activity. To give you an example of how this is used over and over again in Westerns, and I know nobody but me watches Westerns anymore, but I had a good time. It's tough work, but somebody's got to do it. So I went back and looked at some of the classic Westerns. Let's start with Hang 'Em High, video clip number 12. Clint lays it out.
Well, I don't care how you slice it, whether it's nine men out on a plane with a dirty rope or a judge with his robes on in front of the American flag. Those boys are going to be just as dead as if they'd been lynched.
That's right, Cooper, just as dead. But they won't have been lynched. They'll have been judged. And if you can't see the difference, you better take off that star hand right now.
Not just yet, Your Honor.
Yeah, there we go. So, you know, the thing is that there was some real veritas there in that. Because, you know what, Clint is telling him this back and forth between the judge there. What we're talking about when we talk about lynching, we're talking about somebody not having due process. That's what President Trump is saying. It is shorthand for no due process. Exactly. But there were other, this is something that, of course, we all know. It was as much a part of the Western, pretty much, the lynch mobs and so forth, as much a part of Westerns as the horses themselves, even Trigger, Let's go to Young Guns number 2, video clip number 11.
If there was one thing an outlaw feared in the New Mexico territory, it was lynch mob justice.
Right on time.
With no patience for courts and trials, they did it their own way. And there was no stopping them. Mainly because the so-called law...
Howdy.
Had no damn intentions of stopping him.
You're a bit late.
Yeah, there you go. The law had no intention of stopping him. Of course, you have all the different lynch mob scenes where there's a bad guy, or maybe he's guilty, maybe he's innocent. We don't know. But the sheriff, the good sheriff, will stand there and face down the lynch mob. No, he's going to have a trial. Well, that's not happening in Washington, is it? No. Is it? One more example. And, of course, we can't talk about Western tropes without talking about John Wayne. So here's a John Wayne scene, video clip number 13.
You got any last words, Scotsman?
Aye. Give me my bonnet. My head's cold.
Howdy. Got you kind of surrounded, haven't they?
This your business, mister?
What is he, a murderer or a horse thief?
He's a sheep farmer.
Phew, that's where that horrible odor comes from.
That's right.
Murderer, horse thief, card cheat. No, he's a sheep
herder. Hang him too, or just beat him up some more?
Mister, you shouldn't butt into something that's none of your business. You really shouldn't.
I think you're right, friend. Man shouldn't butt into anything that ain't his own affair. Sheep farmer? You want to sell them sheep?
Yes, sir.
Well, let's see. I'll give you 100 now and 300 when I get them to market.
Well, that's highway robbery.
Well, maybe you think you're going to get a better offer for them today.
I'll take it.
I'll take it, yeah. All right, so, yeah, he's not a horse thief. He's not a card cheat. He's not even a Democrat. He's just a sheep herder. And to save his life, he says, I'll buy those sheep. Now your fight's with me, said John Wayne. Well, it's not just a Western trope. Lynching has been a trope of the Democrats, a political trope as well. again, you know, let's just run the greatest hits, some of this, of the Democrats when they were talking about Clinton impeachment, the same thing, impeachment. And they called it a lynching. All these Democrats, even Joe Biden. Impeachment's not a lynching. It shouldn't be. It's part of our Constitution. Our country has a dark, shameful history of lynching. And this is what's happening now, and it's despicable. You know, like those Trump voters. Here's the greatest hits of some of the Democrats and their political trope of lynching when they were referring to impeachment in 1998, 21 years ago.
And indeed, it is a political lynching.
Political lynch mob.
I will not vote for this lynching.
We're in so much hurry to get this done so it can be in the Saturday-Sunday news cycle and have our mint juleps at 5 o'clock. We are going to find a rope, find a tree, and ask a bunch of questions later.
How dare the president compare lynching to impeachment?
I don't know how to characterize that from our president except as grotesque.
Thousands of African Americans were slaughtered during the lynching epidemic in this country for no reason other than the color of their skin.
How dare he do this? Does he not know the history of lynching in this country?
Okay, that's good. That's not just a lesson in history, folks. That is a lesson in hypocrisy. 21 years, two different parties. Don't use that L word. Joe Biden again in 1998. We also had Jerry Nadler accused Republicans of running a lynch mob against Bill Clinton again. There was nothing racist about it, but they make it racist all the time. Yes, you had people who were lynched, who were black, but it happened all of the time. Lynching in the general term simply means that you're in a hurry. You're not going to do any due process. It's a mob. They're not going to have an orderly court process. They're just going to kill somebody. And, of course, you got Jerry Nadler, one of the leaders today. Going back to 1998, and you look at this picture of him 21 years ago. That was when he was in his kind of his Humpty Dumpty stage. He was a lot more lovable then, quite frankly. He looks kind of lovable. Not like today. Not like today. And he was talking about a lynch mob against Bill Clinton. But today, they're all appalled. Jake Tapper is calling people racist, anti-Semitic. You've got Mazie Hirono. I'm appalled that Lindsey Graham would defend President Trump and so forth. And we had also the news media jumped in on this back in the day. CNN, who was so outraged by President Trump's use of the word lynching, CNN said of the Benghazi hearings that it was a high-tech lynching of Hillary Clinton. That's what they said, CNN opinion, back in 2015. In 2017, Foreign Policy said, then the Breitbart lynch mob came for me. In 2016, the Washington Post featured an op-ed titled, Comey Caves to a Lynch Mob Mentality, saying the Republicans have been a lynch mob. See, the only crime, only Republicans can commit crimes. Only Republicans can have lynch mobs. It's not a lynch mob if the Democrats do it. It's only a crime if you investigate what they do. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Of deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, your host, David Knight.
As I pointed out, you know, Hillary Clinton cannot commit crimes. Even when James Comey admits that she commits multiple felonies at the highest level violating national security, things classified above top secret. So in terms of the quality of intelligence that she violated, in terms of the quantity of intelligence that she violated, nobody has ever done it to a greater extent. And yet, James Comey, even though he says, well, multiple felonies were committed, but it doesn't behoove us to go after Hillary Clinton. See, Democrats can't commit crimes. The only crime is to investigate them. They project their crimes onto other people. you know, doing business with Russia or China. Oh, that's a Clinton thing. But yeah, don't. If you talk about it, you're the criminal. If you investigate it, you're creating a conspiracy theory. It's not a conspiracy investigation. And in the same way, only Republicans can be a lynch mob. So Democrats are not a lynch mob right now during impeachment. It was Republicans 21 years ago who were the lynch mob during impeachment. And so yesterday, we had, as AP News put it, when the Republicans disrupted this impeachment lynch mob. Oh, I'm sorry. It's not a lynch mob. That's right. It's Democrats doing it. When they disrupted the impeachment deposition, chaos ensued. In the same way that, you know, chaos has now come to the Middle East because of President Trump saying we're going to bring troops home, even if he doesn't bring the troops home. And no troops have come home yet. We've had some moved around, but they haven't come home yet. But it's chaos. It's chaos, nevertheless. And it was chaos in D.C. After years of Democrat conspiracy and fictional narratives to try to overthrow our election, to try to do regime change here in America, it was chaos, and the Republicans stood up to it yesterday. Here's a little bit of what happened. We had Republicans, as the AP points out, Republicans briefly brought the Democrat-led impeachment investigation. Sorry, it's a witch hunt. It's a lynching. They brought that witch hunt lynching to a halt briefly when around two dozen GOP House members stormed into a closed-door deposition with a Defense Department official. They said they drew the focus away from the testimony of top U.S. diplomat who told lawmakers about what President Trump had done in the Ukraine. Now, that's the AP editorializing. See, this is the motivation behind this was not that we want an open, fair process here. We want to have due process. That wasn't the motivation at all. This was simply a distraction to make sure that people didn't see what was going on. Now, Hillary Clinton would never use a phony accusation of Russian hacking to distract people from the actual information that was handed over by insiders in the DNC about how she had rigged the process. No. That was not a red herring. That was not a distraction. As Jim Jordan said, the members have just had it, and they want to be able to see and to represent their constituents and to find out what's going on. And, of course, Jim Jordan is the top Republican on the House Oversight and Reform panel. And I think there is some oversight and reform needed in this process. Steve Scalise, the number two House Republican, the guy who was shot by a triggered social justice warrior as they were at baseball practice. Steve Scalise said Democrats are running, quote, a Soviet-style process that should not be allowed in the United States of America. We are not going to be bullied, he said. And you also had Buddy Carter speaking out on the impeachment. He said, if a government can do this to the president of the United States, they can do this to you as well. That's right. And they've been doing it to us. They've been doing it to us. Buddy, if you haven't... hey, Buddy. Buddy Carter, if you haven't noticed, I've noticed, Buddy. I've noticed that they're doing it. They're stealing our property. They're stealing our kids. They don't give us due process. They hide exculpatory evidence on us. And so I'm not surprised that they're doing it to the president. You guys need to step up your game and do something to protect us as well from this lack of this lynch mob coming out of Washington, D.C.
In a world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
I want to talk a little bit more about what happened in Washington yesterday as we had the Republicans say, we've had it. They crashed the secret behind closed door star chamber hearings, or let's just call it the lynch mob. So you had a mob actually come against the other lynch mob. So we had competing mobs in Washington yesterday. And as you have the narrative being sold by the New York Times and mainstream media, did this U.S. ambassador really undermine President Trump's defense? We're going to take a look at that, the reactions to that. We're going to take a look at what the Kurds have said about the Free Syrian Army. This Free Syrian Army, the people that were our allies there, you know, along with the Kurds, They were our allies. We were arming them. We had John McCain posing with them, Obama arming them, saying what great guys they are, comparing them to the Patriots, the American Revolution. And a Kurd just said, no, they're actually ISIS, Free Syrian Army. So we're going to go back, a flashback. We told you about this. We're going to take a look at that as well. At the bottom of the hour, we are going to have Michael Voris from Church Militant talking to us about this amazing conference that happened in the Amazon. And you may have noticed the fact that there was a figurine of a naked pregnant woman. It has been called a lot of different things. It's been called Pacamama, an Incan goddess. It was actually part of a Catholic religious ceremony there. The Vatican representatives were, it's been described as a fertility doll, Amazonian idol, an Incan goddess, also called Our Lady of the Amazon, although the Vatican representatives wanted to say, well, that's not supposed to represent the Virgin Mary. But they were venerating it, and some people got angry about that and threw the thing in the fire. But Michael Voris and Church Militant has talked quite a bit about what is going on with this. This is not simply an internal Catholic dispute. This is actually incorporating Marxism and environmentalism in a religious way, and that's what he's been saying. I've been saying this for a very long time as well. We're seeing a religious veneration of environmentalism. That is the religion that our kids are being taught in school. There isn't a separation of church and state. Yeah, they're separating church out of everything, right? But they're putting in their own religion. And so we're going to be talking about that at the bottom of the hour. And then also coming up, we'll be talking about Zuckerberg, who is grilled on the Hill and lying about Libra. So that's all coming up later in the program. I got so busy talking about the Ukraine, about the lynch mob stuff and the Western Clips, I forgot to do a plug. And folks, if you don't support us, we aren't going to be here. So I didn't do a plug at the end of the last hour here. So I just want to tell you about some of the things that we've got at InfoWars Store right now. You know, you can get your Christmas shopping done early. It's not just supplements. But we also have other types of things as well. The Alexa Pure Breeze, for example, now 40% off. This is a very attractive, very silent, very effective product. We have these all around the office. We use them all the time. As a matter of fact, we really severely needed it yesterday in my house. We had a cooking incident, and the smoke was thick enough that you could cut it. And we put that in there, and when you got some... it automatically senses if there's something in the air. And it steps up the speed of the fan. And it's got that little wave on there that is three different colors. If it's really heavy, it turns red. And then if it notices something and is working, then it turns kind of a purple. And then it goes blue if everything is all clear. And just kind of monitoring things. It kind of goes in the background there. But it got it cleared out very quickly, very silently. It's very, very important, not just for situations like that, but you never know what kind of toxins are in your home. I mean, we've got furniture, we've got flooring, we've got countertops, always outgassing things in many cases. You never know with these materials that you have in your home. And if your home is tightly closed up because you're trying to keep it hot or you're trying to keep it cold in summer or hot during the winter, you're going to be getting a very, very concentrated form of air pollution, perhaps the most air pollution many of us are going to be subjected to. In the home. And so you need to have a good filter for that. That is right now 40% off the Alexa Pure Breeze. We also have up to 50% off of survival foods. These are storable foods, non-GMO, made in America. They can be stored for up to 25 years or resealable. Just take a look. We've now got a second wave of blackouts that are hitting California. You don't realize just how fragile our infrastructure is already. And we've got Democrats like AOC running around like the gremlins on the airplane wing in a Twilight Zone episode. They're just out there trying to rip everything apart, gleefully doing it. And they're pretty successful, pretty far along in California. So, folks, make sure that you've got that you've hedged your bets in terms of food costs. But also, you know, when the lights go out, that you're going to have something that you've provided for yourself, a gravity feed water filter, survival foods, all these types of things. And then, of course, with the natural ingredients that we have, many different products to help you sleep, to fight inflammation, 50% off, free shipping store-wide, double Patriot points, a great time right now to provide for your family. You can even do a lot of Christmas shopping with these preparedness products. 40 to 70% off, free shipping, double Patriot points, InfoWarsStore.com. All right, let's talk a little bit about, again, what happened yesterday. Mark Walker, a Republican representative, said, update, we are in the SCIF, and every GOP member is quietly listening. You see, the SCIF is where Schiff does his dirty work. Schiff has a SCIF. Meanwhile, Adam Schiff, clearly peeved that he will no longer be able to hide his impeachment sham, is threatening ethics punishment for all of us. As a matter of fact, Debbie Wasserman Schultz said that he had threatened to charge ethics GOP members with ethics violations after 25 of them remained in the room. So he's going to put out ethics violations against 25 people, he says. But this particular guy was not intimidated. Mark Walker said his fake intimidation can't hide his lies. We need to open up the process. He went on to say he doesn't have the guts to come out and talk to us. He just left. He just got up and left. He doesn't have the guts to tell us why we can't come into the room, why he doesn't want this to be transparent. It's the biggest facade, the biggest farce of my life. Well, there's other farces that are out there, and these are farces that are being employed by the media. You can see up near the top of the Drudge Report, Ukraine knew of the aid freeze by early August, undermining the Trump defense. And this is a story from Microsoft News. Here's how they put it, and then we'll deconstruct it and tell you what's really going on. Kiev, Ukraine. Two Democrats who say that President Trump's decision to freeze $391 million in military aid was intended to bully Ukraine's leader into carrying out investigations for Mr. Trump's political benefit. President and his allies say there was no quid pro quo because Ukrainians did not know that the assistance had been blocked. A quote by a congressional Republican saying that neither this Ambassador Taylor, William B. Taylor, a diplomat in Kiev, he had not provided any testimony and neither had any other witnesses provided testimony that Ukrainians were aware that military aid was being withheld. As a matter of fact, we've got a clip of him saying that, I think, don't we? Oh, no, that was yesterday we had that clip. So we'll get that for you when we come back from break. But in fact, they said the word of the aid freeze had gotten out to high-level official Ukrainian officials by the first week of August, according to the New York Times, and they never lie, right? New York Times never lies. Actually, President Trump has just canceled the White House subscription to the Washington Post and the New York Times. I'm surprised that they had one, quite frankly. I mean, you can get the stuff online. It's not worth reading. How many times does an organization have to be caught lying before they're no longer a trusted source? Well, that depends on their political agenda, right? Because they never have any penalty. They never lose the check mark from DARPA and Microsoft. The NewsGuard check mark. It's always there. Always there. And those are the same people going to be counting our votes with Election Guard, Microsoft, DARPA. $10 million worth of funding to make sure that our election results are protected. Yeah, right. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Set me free. Yeah, welcome back. In the next segment, we're going to be joined by Michael Boris of Church Militant, watching what is going on with this Pope and how he is bringing in environmentalism, making it the central organizing principle of the Vatican now under his leadership. It is something that comes from the liberation theology of South America, and they are embracing it in a big way in this Pan-Amazon Synod that is going on, still going on, from October the 6th to the 27th. And we're going to be talking about what happened this last week. But there's a lot of different aspects, things that are being pulled together there. It's a confluence of Marxism and environmentalism. It sounds just like AOC has become Pope-S. AOC, the new, she couldn't say it any better than the Pope is saying it. So we're going to be talking to him coming up in the next segment. In the last segment, I was talking about how Microsoft News had said, well, you know, some congressional Republicans said that this ambassador, William Taylor, and no other witness had provided testimony that Ukrainians were aware that military aid was being withheld and there was no quid pro quo. Well, that Republican is Congressman Ratcliffe. Here's exactly what he had to say, so you can hear what he had to say.
If this were a court case, the lawyers for the defense would be moving for a directed verdict. They'd be saying, this case isn't allowed to go to the jury because the prosecution is missing an essential element of their case. There is no quid pro quo until someone from the Ukraine says, we knew that military aid was being withheld during that July 25th call, and that testimony hasn't come, and it's not coming. This is just another in the latest of a frame job of the president. They tried to frame him for being a Russian agent and failed. They tried to frame him for obstructing justice using a legal standard that had never been applied to anyone else and failed. And now they're trying to frame him for a quid pro quo involving military aid where no Ukrainian was aware that military aid was being withheld. It's it's grossly unfair.
All right. That was Representative Ratcliffe. He was the one that was vaguely referred to by this Microsoft News piece that you see at the top of the Drudge Report, saying this is the smoking gun. And we've heard this before, haven't we? As Nolte at Breitbart said, the big fake news today is that Ukraine's top diplomat, William Taylor, delivered a smoking gun to Adam Schiff. These are the headlines. You see, they're calling it the smoking gun again. So here we are. We have the hoax part due, or the coup part due, I think we should call it. Coup part due, part two. And it's another smoking gun. The walls are closing in on President Trump. All of it, as Nolte writes, coordinated by a news cycle about how President Trump is toast. He's done. He's out. Except that, once again, it is fake news. Even though Schiff's secret impeachment inquiry is supposed to be secret, leaks to the far left, CNN, New York Times, Washington Post, were put out there, and they were repeated by the media without any scrutiny at all. So selective things are leaked out to Schiff immediately to these people who are opposed to President Trump. And as I reported yesterday, it's been a month since we had testimony from another administration official, diplomat, that was exculpatory. In other words, it showed that President Trump is innocent. That has now been, that's been hidden. Nobody has leaked that. That hasn't gotten out. It is now hidden, classified, sealed, locked up. And yet, this testimony, this smoking gun, was immediately put out to the media, and we've got all the usual suspects writing pieces about this. The rest of this guy's testimony, transcripts, recording of his entire testimony. So, you know, this thing that's a smoking gun, we can't see his entire testimony. That's not been declassified. That's not been leaked by Adam Schiff. Transcripts, recordings of his entire testimony remained hidden, guarded, secreted away. The so-called media perfectly fine with this, perfectly happy to publish what Schiff wants them to publish. And what else Representative Ratcliffe had to say? He said, well, I found the Ambassador Taylor to be very forthright. He had very strong opinions about Donald Trump's approach to foreign policy. But again, the mainstream media reporting that he provided evidence of a quid pro quo involving military aid is false. I questioned him directly on that. And under Adam Schiff's rules, I can't tell you what he said. But I can tell you what he didn't say. And neither he nor any other witness has provided testimony that the Ukrainians were aware that the military aid was being withheld. You can't have a quid pro quo with no quo. In other words, quid pro quo, frequently translated, this for that, or probably more accurately, I guess, this before that, right? And that didn't happen. Didn't happen. There wasn't any this or that, according to the full testimony that's there. So this is something that's leaked out. This smoking gun is leaked out, according to Ratcliffe, who actually questioned him on that point specifically. And he said, well, I'm not allowed to tell you that, but I can tell you that he didn't say what the mainstream media is saying. He didn't tell you what CNN, the New York Times, And the Washington Post are saying that he said, didn't do that. You know, in New York Times, it was just this last week, the New York Times editorial board pointed out that not only is there a deep state, and not only is it alive and well, but it's a good thing. Remember all the years when they said globalists, that's a conspiracy theory. Or it's racist, right, if you talk about that. And then they came out and said, no, globalism, that's good. That's good now. And now they're saying the same thing. New York Times editorial board member said it not only exists, but the deep state is alive and well. The piece was titled, "They Are Not the Resistance. They are not a cabal. They are public servants. Let us now praise these not silent heroes." And he's trying to rebrand them, he said, from being tyrannical to heroic. He said, "President Trump is right. The deep state is alive and well, but it is not sinister, anti-democratic cabal of his fever dreams. It is rather a collection of patriotic public servants, career diplomats, scientists, intelligence officers, and others who, from within the bowels of this corrupt and corrupting administration, have somehow remembered that their duty is to protect the interests, not of a particular leader, but of the American people." And we talked about that at some length yesterday when we talked about Elizabeth Warren's Frankenstein monster that she wanted to make herself the chief dictator of, the CFPB, the Consumer Financial Protection Board, this board that goes above and beyond any of these deep state bureaucracies that write the laws. They have the enforcement officers who go out and determine that you're guilty. You have no presumption of innocence. You have no due process in their tribunals, and they will assess the penalties, and you have no protection against excessive fines either, because it's not a law, it's a regulation done by these patriotic public servants who, from within the bowels of this corrupt and corrupting administration, have somehow remembered their duty is to protect their own jobs. And that's what we saw at the CFPB as the first director, who was supposed to, actually, the first director was supposed to be Elizabeth Warren. She creates this dictatorial thing funded by the Federal Reserve. They don't even have to worry about getting their money cut off by Congress because they get money from the Fed. And she was going to make herself the first dictatress. And Republicans said, no, you're not going to get that if that happens. And then when the first guy sat down, the number two said, I'm in charge here. Pulled an Al Haig. And President Trump said, I don't think so. He needs to say that to the judges.
Liberty, it's your move. This is The David Knight Show.
All right, welcome back. I think you're going to find this amazing, what is happening with Pope Francis and what is going on in the Amazon. Joining us now is Michael Voris. His website is churchmilitant.com. You may have noticed it was picked up by the media when AP picked it up. Thieves steal an Amazon fertility statue, okay, as this conference there in the Amazon nears the end. But that's just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, the thing is still going through to the 27th, I believe, but there have been a lot of articles about all the different aspects of this at churchmilitant.com. So I wanted to get Michael Voris on to talk about this because it combines the liberation theology of Marxist priests out of South America. It combines that with the radical environmentalism, the radical population reduction, and all of that used as a justification for a one-world government. And you got a lot of the usual suspects down there, like Schellenhuber, who was there with the Pope's encyclical. And there's articles about all this stuff at Church Militant. So I'm going to let Michael Voris explain it to you because they've been all over this. Thank you for joining us, Michael.
Very much, David. Good to see you again. Thank you very much, and hi to your viewers.
Well, thank you. Thank you for coming back. Always interesting to talk to you. And we got this thing, which I'd never seen before, Pachamama, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. Tell us a little bit about this thing that thieves stole and threw into the river. Of course, if I'd been there, I think I would have burned it with fire. I think that's appropriate for idols. I don't know.
Yeah, well, that's true. But I mean, I think they just had to sort of get rid of it really fast. So, yeah. Unholy things have, there's a tradition of dumping unholy things into the Tiber. So, hey, they kept the tradition going. Good Catholic tradition.
Yeah, there you go. Well, tell us a little bit about that, because they use this thing with the Stations of the Cross, as you point out in your article. They combined all this indigenous, paganistic rituals along with political protests that were Marxist-based, along with the Stations of the Cross. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I mean, look, the whole Amazon Synod is a pretext to push this globalist agenda. And certainly as a faithful Catholic, what's extraordinarily just ticks you off is that, look, you want to have a globalist agenda? Go ahead and have a globalist agenda. Let's duke it out in the world of public opinion and all of that. Mm-hmm. Do not dress it up as some sort of Catholic theological position. And that's what they're doing here at this agenda. If you look at the main players on stage here, I mean, leave aside Pope Francis, the people who are sort of the second tier, the people who are actually getting everything done. The leading character here is a fellow by the name of Cardinal Claudio Humes, who is 80-something now. He has been a liberation theology supporter since back in the 70s when it was introduced into the sort of the real lifeblood of South American Catholicism.
And that's really Marxism. That's a Marxist perspective, a redistribution of income and pushing Marxist revolutions throughout Central and South America.
Yeah, that's exactly. I mean, you know, there a couple of escapees, I suppose you could call it, from the Soviet Union, outed liberation theology as one of the ways to destabilize the Catholic Church in South America. They wanted to. I mean, if you just sort of look at the geopolitics of the time, the 1960s. Of course, there's the Cuban Missile Crisis. Soviet ships putting missiles into Fidel Castro's Cuba. They're trying to get into Central America. I mean, the entire, sorry about that. I hit the
no
camera.
No problem. Just keep talking. We're fine.
There we go. Okay. So the guys, can one of you fix this for me, please? The entire Reagan administration's foreign policy was essentially fighting communist infiltration into Central America. You know, the Sandinistas, Nicaragua, and all of that. And when you move down into South America, the KGB was busy sort of sowing wheat. Then they realized, wow, we're never going to be able to advance Marxism, Soviet style Marxism, in South America, as long as the Catholic Church, with its dominant, cultural, theological, apparatus is in place. We have to do something to take down that apparatus. And they took down the apparatus by introducing, essentially creating class warfare. Now, of course, yes, there were lots of things wrong and the poor were marginalized and all that sort of thing. But the answer, the answer to trying to lift people out of poverty is not introduce Marxism.
That's right. It was a secular political movement, and that lives on with all these liberation theologists. And of course, Pope Francis has connections to these people who have been there for a long time in that liberation theology movement. But what was really also amazing was how in the Amazon, Michael, they combined this with paganism and really kind of a neo-paganism, because when you look up Pachamama, not just this particular statue, but you look up the term on Google, and you'll see a lot of different pictures of Mother Earth. And so this really kind of ties into James Lovelock and the secular environmentalist movement and their Gaia hypothesis or Gaia theory or whatever, where they look at the Earth as a living organism. And the fact that we're a virus, and so we got to be stamped out. That's part of the population reduction. But it pulls in all that stuff, population reduction, this kind of worshiping of the earth as a goddess, Mother Earth. That's what Gaia is all about. And this is really kind of pulled in. This is kind of the Incan, Brazilian manifestation of this Gaia theory there, isn't it?
Well, it's an interesting point here to go back to something I'd said earlier about how they're using Catholic theology, misusing, abusing Catholic theology to push this. When the whole Pachamama, when the statues started getting a high visibility not just at the Vatican Garden ceremony the Saturday before on the Feast of St. Francis, but, you know, they were being paraded into St. Peter's Basilica. There are the Stations of the Cross. They're being put into churches all over Rome, all that sort of thing. They just kept keeping this high profile of these little statues, wooden carvings, really. I mean, I'm not even sure I'd necessarily call them statues.
And let's emphasize that they brought this into the Vatican, and you know, it wasn't just at the Amazon area. They brought these statues there at the Vatican and so forth.
Yeah, there's either six or seven of them. Well, there were six or seven of them in Rome. Five of them hopefully have floated out into the Mediterranean at this point since they got pitched a few nights ago. hopefully some whale has them and has constipation or, you know, indigestion or something because of them now. But this point on Pachamama is just a name for the personal deity that is this Mother Earth thing, the goddess of fertility, the goddess of water, which is where she is now, the goddess of this. It's this whole Mother Earth worship thing. And there's an overlap here because once faithful Catholic journalists like us here at Church Militant and others started talking about, hey, wait a minute, this is pagan worship. That's what this is. All of a sudden, the Vatican and its little excusers sitting in their press hall started making comments saying, this is just like St. Francis with, brother, son, and sister moon. See, he referred to the sort of the everything's connected thing. I mean, that's such a perversion of what St. Francis said. St. Francis didn't describe a personal consciousness to the son, and he was speaking as a fellow creature, that we are all creatures dependent on God. I mean, you have a picture up right now. Those are the statues. They're about, I don't know, 18 inches high or so. And then so they tried to like schlock it over by saying, oh, well, you know, look, St. Francis is kind of on board with all of this, too, you know, 800 years ago. And then a number of people have said, oh, well, those statues of the Blessed Virgin Mary, just Amazonian style.
We've got to take a break, and we're going to be right back. We're talking to Michael Voris, churchmilitant.com. They've been all over this Amazon synod, and it's pretty amazing. I mean, it goes into infanticide, pantheism, Marxism. This is an interreligious dialogue with atheist eco-globalists. That's really what it is. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back. We're talking to Michael Voris, churchmilitant.com, and his website is all over what is going on in the Amazon. The Amazon Synod, and it's not just there. They brought these Pachamama statues back to the Vatican, and some traditional Catholics have thrown them into the river there, which is where they belong. But it's not just the taking over of our institutions by these people, and what are their ends, and what are their politics? I mean, they're turning the Catholic Church into a political activist organization with a secular political agenda, an economic agenda that is Marxist in its nature, using this to push revolution and regime change throughout Central and South America. This has been going on for quite some time, but it's now picking up speed with the eco-globalist, and it is a globalist agenda, also going back to globalism, going back to Mother Earth, the Gaia hypothesis, and so forth, bringing all this stuff together in various forms. And Michael, one of the things that was truly amazing was your report about infanticide and how this process with some of these native tribes there, that they're trying so hard to celebrate, but not distinguish. Many of these church officials are not distinguishing because of political correctness. They're not distinguishing this practice of infanticide that is happening there, exposed by a documentary there in the Amazon. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, David, not only are they not distinguishing, they're actually lying and being deceptive about it. The Brazilian Bishops Conference actually had on its website links to papers supporting infanticide. not promoting it as a good thing to do for its own sake, but because just like in, you know, here in the United States, we have the PC thing. You can never talk about Native Americans, that Canada calls them First Nation, all this stuff. Well, that same mentality exists, down to South America. You run across the same thing in New Zealand and Australia, that the sort of the First Nations, the first people are sacrosanct. You can never say anything about them. That's the PC blanket over it. So when various Brazilian lawmakers wanted to banish and abolish this practice of infanticide among the indigenous peoples of the forest, as they keep getting referred to as, the liberal politicians in Brazil came out and said, oh, no, you can't impose your Western values on these indigenous people, even if they're killing their own children who were born deformed or twins or whatever.
Yeah, and they're burying these kids alive if they have deformities. I mean, I was absolutely amazed to see that. But, of course, this always goes back to political correctness, because that is a Marxist tool to control your speech and therefore control you. And that is more important, to have that control lever of political correctness and to set up this intersectionality there. That is the primary goal of these people, not to protect innocent life.
Yeah, that's exactly correct. The fact that the Brazilian bishops linked to support papers on their website, and when that got reported and asked about one day in the Senate Hall press conference a couple of weeks ago, the next day the bishops in Brazil took that link off their page. And an Italian journalist there, a wonderful guy, sat in front of me a couple of times in the press hall. He's got a great sense of humor. Was standing there showing up. Here it is. And, he had printed out all of the copies, hard copy printed out. And he found it. And then after he printed it out and got the goods on him, then he reported it. Then they took it down. One of the cardinals there went berserk when this particular reporter asked the question about infanticide. It was almost never happened. He got all heated and incensed. He took his translation headphones off and was like, no one ever shows any evidence of this. Well, there was tons of evidence of it. So it just goes to show sort of the duplicitousness of all of this. And I if I can do just a very quick expand statement here, a philosophical expansion statement. For all of your viewers, the fight for the salvation of Western civilization is the fight that is going on right now in the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. And it is, the battle will be won or lost in the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church built Western civilization on the ruins of the Roman Empire. It took some of the things from the Roman culture that were good and baptized them, moved them forward, expanded the faith, introduced the idea of equality for women. I mean, all of these things are Catholic Western civilization things. And that is what the globalists hate. It's why the founder of the Italian Communist Party said, while he was in prison, Mussolini threw him in prison, said that none of this advancement of world Marxism can happen as long as the Catholic Church remains this obstacle blocking the way. So the Catholic Church is enemy number one.
And now they've changed it with Pope Francis. They've changed it from their number one enemy to their number one ally, because he's now baptized all of the stuff that is on the other side, all of the different philosophies and political actions and everything that are being used to deconstruct Western civilization. He is now pulling these things together, which is what we can see in the Synod and in the Amazon, isn't it?
And I can tell you, it's why the Vatican has now sort of changed course. They used to ignore folks like Church Militant and LifeSite News and all these other places who are faithful Catholic media outlets on the internet. They used to ignore us, but we have drummed up and keep pounding this message, and it's getting through to people. And it's even getting through in some of the questions in the press hall. I sat there and listened to some of those questions, was like, all right, people are getting the narrative now, and they're getting it so much that the Marxist gang running the Vatican right now is now having to fight back. Now they're starting to say that we're journalists without ethics.
You're fake news.
We're all politically motivated. I'm like, journalists without ethics, you mean like the whole rest of the journalistic world for the past 50 years? Is that what you're talking about? Because, yeah, we'd agree with you on that. But it's, yeah, there is a war going on. The war inside the church is what is going to determine what happens to Western civilization.
Yeah, you know, I've been, one of these articles that you got at churchmilitant.com is about Schellenhuber. And he first came to my attention when the Pope brought him in to do an encyclical about the environment. And I thought, well, why is he doing an encyclical about the environment? You know, talking about, and then I started looking at who this guy was, who was his chief spokesman that he put in his Academy of Sciences and so forth. And this guy, Schellenhuber, I mean, he has pushed all kinds of stuff, you know, from radical population reduction to reorganizing and creating a one-world government that has an Earth constitution, a global council, a planetary court. You go through all of this stuff in your article. You go back through his history, a self-professed atheist. And, of course, this is something that is widely supported by a lot of globalist elite. I mean, you see his picture all the time with this Earth League, you know, advocating the Earth constitution, the global council, the planetary court. To bring people before that, he's appearing with Prince Charles, who's also pushing that as well. Yeah. So this is a very serious thing by the global elite pushing this idea.
Oh, sure. And, you know, you take a look at the every sort of facet and detail of this synod, all the support work in advance of it. The paper that he wrote, an encyclical he wrote, was called Laudato Si, and it was 2 or 3 years ago. But it was the groundwork for what is now become the Amazon Synod, which will result in another document from the Pope. We don't know if it'll be an exhortation or a higher level of an encyclical. We don't know yet. But whatever the case is, all of this has been in the prep since the first month, after Pope Francis was elected. It's so, yeah. Now you look at every sort of detail and facet of the synod. Who's running it? Liberation theologians are running it. Some of them are clerics, others are not. Your advisory councils for things are communists and Marxists and atheists. Who's funding it? The German church, Catholic Church in Germany, Cardinal Marx and Cardinal Casper, and the Catholic Church in Germany, because of a unique situation there coming out of the Kulturkampf at the end of the 19th century, gets funding. Bismarck attacked the church, and then they did a reparations.
Michael, we're about to run out of time. Can I get you to hold over through the commercial break?
Absolutely.
You got a little bit more time? All right, we're gonna continue this discussion. On the other side of this, I also want you to talk about this article you got about the secret pact of the catacombs being renewed at this Amazon conference that's there. Amazing stuff. And folks, let me just remind you again, now we've got a great number of specials at InfoWarsStore.com. Discounts from 40 to 70% off on a wide variety of products. We have free shipping, double Patriot points, the Alexa Pure Breeze. This is a big savings, 40% off to make sure you got clean air inside your home. We've got 70% off Survival Shield X2 Nascent Iodine. We have up to 50% off Survival Foods. Free shipping, double Patriot points, InfoWarsStore.com. We'll be right back.
In a world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. We're talking to Michael Voris, churchmilitant.com. I have an amazing number of articles about what's going on right now in the Amazon, the synod that's happening down there, bringing together Marxism and a lot of other issues, a radical restructuring of global government. And of course, they are using the Pope as the leader to bring this about. As Michael was saying, in the past, the Catholic Church was on the other side. The Catholic Church was on the side of Western civilization and protecting life and so forth. And now they are switching this around, and they are using these Marxist Latin American theologians, their liberation theology, they are now switching this around. And Michael, go ahead and finish up with what you were saying. We had to go to break. You were talking about who's funding this, coming out of Germany and so forth. But I also want to talk about this secret pact of the catacombs that was just renewed and done so publicly in conjunction with what's going on in the Amazon right now. But let's go back to what you were saying when we had to go to break about how this is getting funded out of Germany.
Sure. I mean, there's two sources of the funding for this. I mean, the synod itself, you know, you have to have all the people, just the regular maintenance of it. People have to put out chairs. The Vatican workers have to do this. That, well, all of the funding for that is being paid for by the church in Germany. It's really, all of this is really tracing back to the church in Germany, the funding for it, the philosophical underpinning of it, everything. Now, they're not duping the folks in South America. They are happy allies in it, but the whole thing is really going on because of the leadership, the ecclesiastical leadership in Germany, the funding and the philosophy. Likewise, to go to the point again of the sort of the globalist agenda, seeing an opportunity to get in here and, you know, steer the ship, so to speak. One of the major groups from South America that is has brought over all of these people and this contingent of Amazonians and all of this is being funded by the Ford Foundation here in the U.S. I mean, one of the largest international backers in terms of dollars of the entire abortion agenda, abortion, contraception, the whole bit. I mean, these organizations use poor countries as a way to up abortion, increase contraception, because their belief is that you get rid of poverty by killing poor people or not letting them be conceived and be born. I mean, on a chalkboard, I suppose that makes sense, but in reality, it's immoral and you know, demonic.
But we see that with the Gates Foundation. We see that with Margaret Sanger and Planned Parenthood. They were pretty open about that, and that's why they put all the abortion clinics in poor and black communities at the beginning. They were very, very open about that. And, of course, George H.W. Bush's father, Prescott Bush, was her treasurer, has his name right up there on the very first letterhead.
Yeah, it's the whole... I think people don't really understand it. I think what they need to understand is now, since about the 19, I guess you could say maybe 80s to 90s, it start to become more visible. You know, like the tip of the icebergs, you know, is kind of a better analogy might be a submarine, where you just have a little bit of a periscope just kind of, you know, floating across the top of the water, while underneath it was this giant superstructure of a nuclear submarine. Well, now the submarine has really kind of surfaced. And you can see the whole thing. That's what's new. It isn't that the submarine is new. It's that you can see the submarine now. And
it makes sense that this would be coming out of Germany because, you know, Germany is really kind of the power base of the EU, trying to, you know, consolidate that one third of the globe together. Once they get economic consolidation, then they go for political consolidation, then they go for world government. And they really do need to have a worldwide problem and a moral solution. That's how they're using the Pope. I could keep you for another segment if you got time, or I can go through this secret pact of the catacombs. Do you have time for another segment?
I'm running out of time. I got an appointment I got to get to.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll go through this when we come back for the listeners. We didn't get a chance to go to it. Thank you so much, Michael Voris. You can find all these great articles at churchmilitant.com.
In a world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. Very interesting to talk to Michael Voris, churchmilitant.com. As he was saying, you know, they would see the conservatives and the Catholic Church as being their allies and pushing back against Marxism, against world government, and so forth. That happened with John Paul, the Polish Pope, who was an ally in pushing back against communism. But now things have completely flipped. And now the Pope has become an ally of the globalist, and he is aligning himself with Schellenhuber, this guy who is a self-professed atheist, a guy who, along with Prince Charles, is pushing the Earth League, talking about how we're going to have an Earth Constitution, a planetary court that they can haul you before, a planetary court, an Earth Constitution, a global council. All this justified by Marxism, by intersectionality, by political correctness, you know, cultural Marxism, essentially. And the key thing underlying it all is environmentalism. And that's why the Pope was so focused on that. But this is all coming together, just kind of like we, you know, we saw with the Paris Climate Accord, right? Paris Climate Treaty and so forth. All these different forces are coming together. These pagan religions, this pantheism, you know, where God is in everything, and the earth, Gaia, is a goddess. And so they had this statue of an Incan goddess, Pachamama, and they actually brought it to the Vatican, and they were mixing it together with traditional Catholic religious ceremonies there. So some people picked it up and threw it in the river, and they got very angry about that. They said, stealing something from a church, you know, like a pagan idol, and throwing it into the river is not a gesture of bravado. We've said the statues represented life, fertility, and Mother Earth, and such an act goes against the spirit of dialogue, which should animate everybody. Yeah, they're animists, they're pantheists, and they're Marxists. And they've got a political agenda that they're trying to shove down people, and they're trying to baptize this thing, using people like Schellenhuber. But what we didn't get a chance to talk about is this other article at Church Militant. A lot of people picked up on this back and forth, the anger at the Vatican because this idol was stolen and thrown into the river. This article I thought was very interesting. Radical bishops renew secret pact of the catacombs at the Amazon Synod. And this is out of churchmilitant.com. Shrouded by darkness on the night of November 16th, 1965. So back in 1965, what they just did openly in the daylight, they did under the cover of darkness, and they did it secretively. And now the agenda is out in the open. Well, what did they do? It was 42 bishops led by a cleric that they gave the adjective of red to. And this guy was from Brazil. And so these 42 bishops secretly left the Vatican, and they went to the Santa Domitila catacombs on the edge of Rome. They celebrated Mass, and they signed a secret document that came to be known as the Pact of the Catacombs. And as Church Militant writes, the pact was soaked in the euphemistic phraseology of liberation theology, the Marxist dialectical materialism that has now been baptized by radical Latin American theologians. And so they pledged to jettison wealth, privilege, and ecclesiastical titles to work for the advent of a new social order that would involve engaging with international organizations and would result in transforming economic and cultural structures, and of course political structures as well. Political structures. Anybody who's concerned about separation of church and state, the people on the left should be very alarmed about this. But they embrace this because it pushes Marxism and environmentalism. So they don't worry about the separation of church and state if the church is joined together with environmentalism and Marxism. That's okay. During this conference on a Sunday, it was 42 bishops doing it under cover of darkness and doing it in a secret pact. But this Sunday, they had 40 bishops, and I'm not sure if it was this last Sunday or if it was two Sundays ago, because this conference has been going on most of this month. 40 bishops, including two cardinals, participating in the Amazon Synod, returned in broad daylight to those catacombs, celebrated Mass like they did under cover of darkness, and signed an updated document calling it the Pact of the Catacombs for the Common Home. And this time it was done in the daylight. This time they had a lot of people who were not church officials, lay men and women that joined them in this, because this is a movement. It is a movement, and it is linked to everything that we have here in this country that we're fighting. I mean, as I said before, you could basically have AOC replace Pope Francis right now, and you wouldn't even really notice it in terms of politics and philosophy. It really is pretty amazing. You can actually read online the document that they put out, just like you could read online the Pope's previous statements about how they needed to be focused on environmentalism and ecology, and that needed to be the central organizing principle, not the idea that you're going to protect life, which is the way the Catholic Church has primarily been involved in politics up to this point in recent times. Primarily in America, they were involved on the side of life. But even that issue, which is kind of taken a secondary issue to environmentalism under this pope, even that issue was put on the back burner. Well, actually, not on the back burner initially. As he pointed out, it was put on their website. And then when a guy started talking about it, they purged it. But they were talking about the practice of these indigenous people. Don't criticize them. Don't criticize them if you have a child who is deformed and you bury it alive. Who are we? Who are we to question indigenous people? Political correctness must come before ethics or morality, because political correctness gives them control over your speech and over politics and over your life. That's how they can censor any opponents, is with political correctness. So that is the ultimate power there. Even to the extent that as these bishops were talking about the practices there and how, well, maybe they're a little bit troubling. They said, if twins are born, the belief of the indigenous people there in the Amazon was that one of them had to be good and the other one had to be evil. Problem was, in a lot of these villages, they said, well, we don't really know which one's good and which one's evil, so we'll kill them both. We'll kill them both. Presumably burying them alive, I guess, as they do children who were born with deformity. See, this is what happens when you sacrifice all of your values, to this pagan secularism, environmentalism, in order to serve a Marxist political agenda. And that's really what's going on right now. That's why the Pope is so heavily involved with the UN, with the Paris Climate Accord and so forth. They're using him to sell this as a moral imperative. They have used the schools to propagandize the kids to think that they're not even going to live for another 10, 12 years. Just saw an article this morning. I think it was on AP or Reuters. And they were saying, okay, well, you know, the world's going to end pretty much, but what species can we now solve? Let's just try to do some damage control and think about the few species that we can control, save, because everything is just going to be dying and destroyed. And that's what they're selling the kids. And now they're turning this into a religious imperative. You know, to protect the poor, you have to overthrow your government, establish a Marxist organized socialist government that is going to join the international global force, can have a planetary council and, you know, world court and all this other kind of stuff, an Earth Constitution, the Earth League. And you got people like Prince Charles and the Pope who are pushing this everywhere. We'll be right back, and we'll talk about what's going on with Mark Zuckerberg as he got grilled on the Hill yesterday. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Welcome back. We're going to take a look at what happened with Zuckerberg on Capitol Hill. They were talking about free speech, and they were also talking about Libra, his cryptocurrency. Some very interesting back and forth. As we get back into politics, I just want to follow up. Earlier, we were talking about what happened on Capitol Hill with Republicans crashing Adam Schiff's Star Chamber process there. He is threatening to have ethics violations against 25 people. And, of course, you had Steve Scalise many other leaders of the Republican Party present, because they said, look, you are withholding evidence from the public that is exculpatory, that some people have said. You're taking statements that were made by William Taylor out of context. And we played Congressman Ratcliffe. He said, look, I directly asked him if there was a quid pro quo. I can't tell you what he had to say, but I can tell you what he did not say. He did not say that there was a quid pro quo. And they're not releasing the full testimony. They're immediately leaked that out. They said, oh, look, we can take this phrase and we can immediately leak that out. We'll hide the exculpatory stuff from nearly a month ago. That's still classified by Adam Schiff because it wasn't what he wanted to hear. And he doesn't want you to hear the full testimony of this guy, but he wants you to hear a selected part. And that was leaked out immediately. And so after that happened, these guys got pretty angry and they crashed the hearing. Breitbart's got an article about that. Who is William Taylor? The impeachment star witness has a long relationship with a think tank that was financially funded by Burisma. Burisma, this Ukrainian gas company that the Bidens were all caught up in. Burisma. So Burisma, this corrupt thing there, they fund a lot of, they give a lot of money to this think tank that I've talked about many times, the Atlantic Council. The Atlantic Council. That is also being funded by Facebook. And the Atlantic Council funded, gave money to Facebook. Now they're getting the money back from Facebook. They're getting their dividends. But what they did at the very beginning, this NATO-based think tank, the Atlantic Council, has been at the center of censorship. Because the center of censorship, as I've said, and you saw it illustrated last week with the attacks on Tulsi Gabbard. Why? Because she opposed the globalist unending wars. And that really is where the dividing line is. It's not between Democrat and Republican. It's not between left and right. It's between the people who are on the left, who are on the right, who are libertarian and so forth. The people who oppose the military-industrial complex, DARPA, the CIA, the NSA, police state, surveillance state, and endless wars. If you oppose that stuff, you're going to get opposed and shut down by the Atlantic Council. And they're funded by these corrupt businesses that are, you know, lavishing money on the Bidens and lavishing money on Zuckerberg in the early days when he needs it. And now that he's flush with cash, he's paying back the dividends to these guys. And they were the ones saying, we've got to shut down political speech because it got things like Brexit and President Trump elected. And so we got to censor that. Now, in some testimony in New York, because you got in New York a political persecution going on there, as well as what's happening in Washington with Adam Schiff and Nancy Pelosi's impeachment inquiry, right? It's not an impeachment. It's just an inquiry. We're not really. So we don't. There's no controlling legal authority here. We can do whatever we want because I'm just making this up as we go along. It's not exactly an impeachment, but it kind of is an impeachment, but it's not. So I don't have any rules with it, right? And so what's going on in Manhattan is, of course, they're digging around trying to get to President Trump's tax returns. Because as I said from the very beginning, his tax returns are incredibly complex, and they can spin them and selectively release parts of it to make him look as guilty as sin. And we know this because we've talked even about how the IRS is set up. You know, the IRS, depending on whether or not you're going to get audited, it depends on who you get, right? When the law is sufficiently complex, it's the same as having no law at all. And so the IRS and the income tax is a perfect weapon of complexity to use a kind of Kafkaesque trial against people. It becomes so complex, nobody knows what it is. And so it now becomes the opinion of, you know, the guy who's doing the audits. As I talked to Joe Bannister, a former criminal investigator for the IRS, all of those guys would have to get audited on an annual basis. And, you know, his tax return was just basically his salary. It wasn't anything complicated like President Trump, who's got multiple businesses in multiple countries. I mean, you can't even imagine how complex that thing is. And so with Joe Bannister, because this person just didn't like him, you know, I think you guys get paid more than I do. You get to go out and do interesting work. You get to carry a gun and all this kind of stuff. I don't like you guys. And so just out of a personal vendetta, this person said, well, I think you owe thousands of dollars more. And so he challenged that. And after a while, he was vindicated and he got back a lot of money. He had overpaid, actually. But President Trump's tax return is not like that. And so you got Cyrus Vance Jr. who is now the Manhattan District Attorney. Cyrus Vance, many of you may not be old enough to remember the original Cyrus Vance Sr. He was a very well-connected Democrat with a Carter administration, if I remember correctly. And now his son is the district attorney in Manhattan and is the one who is the head guy in terms of trying to take President Trump down on income tax. So they're searching around trying to get these documents. And so a panel of three federal appeal court judges, in the words of NBC News, appeared to be unreceptive Wednesday. Of course, they don't like this, right? Maybe they don't. It's just three federal judges. They probably don't like President Trump. But the interesting thing that came up, and you saw this at the top of the Drudge Report, Trump's lawyers argue that he can't be charged while in office, even if he shoots somebody in the street. You know what? President Trump's lawyer was right. He was absolutely right. The longstanding view of the Justice Department is that a president cannot be indicted while in office. And so President Trump's lawyer, Con Savoy, I guess is the way you pronounce his name, told the Second Circuit Court of Appeals that the immunity extends to the entire criminal justice process, including grand jury subpoenas for documents, tax documents. And so in a back and forth, the New York District Attorney, who is representing Cy Vance's office, said, well, this position is just too absolute. And so to illustrate that, he put up the hypothetical situation. He said, for example, if he pulled out a handgun and shot somebody on Fifth Avenue, and when they asked President Trump's attorney about that, he said, well, the president could be charged with such a crime once he was out of office or if he was impeached and removed from office. He goes, the immunity that is given to the president against these types of prosecutions, which can turn into political persecutions by somebody like Cyrus Vance Jr., that immunity, he said, is not permanent. He says, I'm talking about while he's in office. Nothing can be done. That's your position? He said, that's correct. In other words, what you would do is you would impeach him, remove him from office because of that, and then they would come after him for that particular crime. That's just the way that works. It's exactly right. It sounds sensational, but it's exactly right under the Constitution. There's a good reason for it.
Using free speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
Just before we went to break, I covered what is being used, put out in a sensational way by the press. You saw it at the top of the Drudge Report. President Trump's attorney in Manhattan, as they're trying to fish around, going on a fishing expedition through his complicated tax returns so they can selectively pull things in and out of that that the people won't understand. His lawyer said, no, you don't have any authorization here. The appropriate response, if you don't like somebody, is to impeach them. And they said, well, you know, there's got to be limits on that. And he said, no, there isn't. Now, this is what the Department of Justice has long said that they understand about the Constitution. It's what a clear reading of the Constitution says. Now, if the president has done something that's wrong, you have an indictment, they call it impeachment, in the House. Then you have a trial in the Senate. And if the president is removed, then he becomes like anybody else, and he can be tried for a particular crime, you know, like murder, you know, because they say, well, what if he shot somebody on the street? And I said, well, still, you know, you couldn't try him there for that particular crime because he'd have to be removed first. And the reason you have that there is because you don't want every Democrat attorney general's office or district attorney, you don't want every district attorney that doesn't like him politically being able to haul him before the court and make him defend himself. Because then you basically would keep the president from doing anything. It's like, oh, wait a minute. Isn't that kind of what this whole thing is all about anyway? As we now enter coup part due. You know, it has effectively kept the president from getting nearly as much done as he otherwise would. He is so preoccupied with defending himself against these charges of Russiagate and now this Ukraine phone call and so forth. And then they've got a third front, which is to come after him for his tax returns in Manhattan. You know, do it in an open process. Do it with an impeachment. Have a trial. Go ahead and, you know, finish this thing up and let's move on. But of course, they'll come up with something else, right? It's never ending. It's never ending. But it would be even worse than that if you were to allow every district attorney to have his own little Adam Schiff committee to go after the president. But then it takes it further. And you have Matthew Whitaker, who is the former acting attorney general, goes on the Laura Ingraham show and says, abuse of power is not a crime suitable for impeachment. Well, no, it is. I mean, you basically, certainly I would think that abuse of power would be a crime or misdemeanor that the president could be impeached for. I mean, if you got a absolutely crazy partisan Congress like we do, then they could impeach the president for jaywalking if they wanted to. I would assume that there would be a price for them to pay at the ballot box for doing that type of thing. And I'm assuming there's going to be a price for these people to pay for these two coups that they're trying to run. Actually, third, if we count what's happening in Manhattan. But yeah, you could impeach him for anything that's a misdemeanor. A misdemeanor. Parking tickets. You could impeach the president for parking tickets, Adam Schiff. It's not going to clear in the Senate, hopefully, unless we get a majority ruthlessly partisan Democrats in the Senate. It's not going to pass there. But yeah, you could remove the president from office for anything if they want to do that. It's just that there's going to be a price to pay for that. So he was wrong about that. The other guy was right. You can't try him for murder. You'd have to impeach him first. But you could impeach him for anything. Anything, no matter how ridiculous. Even impeach him for the kinds of stuff that we see McRaven putting out there. You know, he has an op-ed piece. I've seen people saying, McRaven, you know, this is the guy who led the raid that took out Osama bin Laden. I never believed that. A lot of people in the intelligence community never believed that. I said, and my sons can vouch for this, we were all said, uh-oh. They just said that they took out Osama bin Laden. Well, you can bet that those guys that were there on that raid, pretty much something's going to happen to them. And sure enough, something did happen to most of them not too long after that. Well, Admiral William McRaven wrote an op-ed piece. It was on MSN. Actually, it was the New York Times. It was where he published it. And they love it so much that they've talked about, you know, this guy could come in and be our Democrat candidate for president. He'd be a good guy. And, of course, he would be very comfortable with the Democrats. He worked with Obama. He's one of these guys like McChrystal who is constantly pushing the notion that anything that any weapon that the military uses, you shouldn't have, you know, these guns, because like McChrystal said, these guns, you know, they shoot bullets at this velocity. So you shouldn't have a gun that shoots bullets at that velocity. You shouldn't be able to have that. Well, you know, when they came after, you know, when the British came after the weapons conquered in Lexington, they were coming after cannons as well. They had state-of-the-art weapons there. They were trying to get that. Santa Anna came for the state-of-the-art weapons from the Texans who are fighting for their independence. That's why when you look at the come-and-take-it flag, it's a picture of a cannon. Cannons. Cannons. Not just firearms. Cannons. But no, he was at an annual gala event for the OSS Society. The OSS was the wartime version of what became the CIA. And it recognizes past and present members of the intelligence and special operations community. When McRaven was head of Special Forces, he said, you think about Special Forces as kinetic. You think about people who are jumping out of planes and, you know, shooting Osama bin Laden and things like that. But he said, our origins were in intelligence and psychological operations, PSYOPs, and we need to get back to that. And then he went out and caught Osama bin Laden, which I think was a PSYOP, quite frankly. But he also talked about how in the early days of special operations, they would go into an area and they would manipulate the press. They would plant stories. They would find out who their political allies were and who their political enemies were. So then at the very last minute, they could do a kinetic operation. Shortly after that, we had, interestingly enough, Jade Helm, which was leaked to the press. talking about how they were going to do this this big operation and so forth, big kinetic operation. I don't think it was a kinetic operation at all. I think it was a PSYOP operation that was consistent with what McRaven always did. And I think they were able to go through and figure out who was on their side and who wasn't on their side. You know, the slogan of that was Mastering the Human Domain. It had also been the subtitle for a geospatial intelligence conference. They actually have a branch of geospatial intelligence, which is human domain analytics. And geospatial intelligence, which is one of those things that's not talked about, which tells you that it's probably the most important thing. It actually is the fastest growing part of the surveillance and intelligence state, geospatial intelligence. That's where James Clapper lived all those years. He was, heading it, doing keynote speeches at it. They have thousands of people, 4,000 or 5,000 people a year show up at the Geospatial Intelligence Conference. Funny, the press never covers it. I'm kind of like the only person who ever talks about it. Is that a red dot on my forehead moving around? No, but you know they don't want you to hear about that, right? But that was big part of that. And now this guy is out doing another PSYOP. Our republic is under attack from the president, he says. And, he is destroying everything that this country. And he goes on to say, in his op-ed, we've got to stand up against this. We've got to stand up against this president. Because what will happen to the Kurds? What will happen to the Iraqis? What will happen to the Afghans and the Syrians? Yeah, let's ask, what did happen to those people when you were in charge, when your agenda was in charge? What happened to the Kurds, the Iraqis, the Afghans, the Syrians? We all know what happened, and I'm going to tell you more about what happened. Because now we've got the Kurds saying, you guys have been given weapons to ISIS all along. McCain, Obama, McRaven. And now they're coming after President Trump to overthrow our regime here. Well, the Kurds are the closest thing to the guys wearing white hats that you can find anywhere in Syria right now, according to the mainstream media. Of course, we've got the white helmets. Those are the guys that, they're now allied with the Turks, and so they're bad guys. No, wait, they're still good guys, even though they were part of a false flag to try to get us roped into Syria. And now they're fighting against our reliable allies, we're being told. These shifting alliances, I just can't keep track of them, right? All you need to know is that they're lying to you. I mean, this is straight out of 1984. Oceania is our enemy. They were always our enemy. And, the other guys were always our friends and so forth. Whatever. I mean, whoever is the enemy was always the enemy. And whoever is our friend was always our friend. Well, in this shifting narrative, it's kind of difficult for them just yet to flush everything down the memory hole. We now have Ilham Ahmad, president of the Syrian Democratic Council, who met with U.S. congressional representatives and pled with Donald Trump to stop Turkey's massacre and ethnic cleansing of Syrian Kurds. And she also reportedly warned that Turkey's allies in Syria, the Free Syrian Army. Wait a minute. Where have you heard the Free Syrian Army before? Where have you heard about the FSA? Well, they were the big allies of the Obama administration, quite frankly. And you just had, on this weekend, Obama's former special envoy to the anti-ISIS coalition in Syria, Brett McGurk, had told The New Yorker about the previous administration's support for the FSA in an interview published on Saturday. McGurk said the Obama administration all but created the FSA. Listen to what he had to say. In Syria, we're not working with a government, and in many ways, we are working against that government. Who knew? Oh, that is a masterful piece of understatement there, isn't it? Well, in many ways, we're kind of working against that government. Yeah, that's what this is all about. It's all about regime change. And they have had this agenda for more than 20 years. The list of countries that they're going to take down. They're not reacting to ISIS. They created ISIS and they created the FSA. He said, we invested significant amounts of time, significant American resources to build a force that was known as the Free Syrian Army. And, of course, everybody in the obedient mainstream media referred to them as moderate Syrian rebels. But now, Ilham, it's not Ilhan, but Ilham Ahmad, this woman who is a leader of the SDC, a Kurdish leader, is saying they're committing atrocities and they are terrorists. Said the group is filled with jihadis and ISIS. Oh, isn't that amazing? So you mean that the Mujahideen that we used against the Russians in Afghanistan, they somehow became Al-Qaeda, and they were good guys, they were our allies. You had John McCain shopping them around, going to Republican women's meetings and bringing a Mujahideen with them and saying, you can adopt a Muj. You can sponsor this guy. Well, take out those Ruskies. And then they became the bad guys somehow, just like that. They transformed into Al-Qaeda. Renamed, rebranded, and now our former allies are now our enemies. And then Al-Qaeda rebranded and called themselves ISIS, or was it FSA? And they were our frenemies. Our friends and our enemies. It's kind of hard to keep track of these people because the Syrian Democratic Council that Ilham Ahmad is a part of is the political wing of the Syrian Democratic Forces, SDF. That's a Kurdish-led militia. And the SDF is in turn linked to the other Kurdish militia known as the YPG, a known Marxist-Leninist organization, which is itself connected to Turkey's PKK, which is a Marxist-Leninist organization. The PKK, a Marxist-Leninist organization, militant organization in Turkey, trying to fight for independence and to overthrow the Turkish government in their particular areas, has the Kurds in Turkey are 20% of the population. In Syria, they are 15% of the population, and both of them are Marxist-Leninist, and both of them we're arming the YPG. We've been arming those guys, our allies there. And they've been channeling weapons to the PKK in Turkey. That's one of the reasons why. That's the reason that, not one of the reasons, that's the principal reason why Turkey is coming in. And the mainstream media won't talk about that. The FSA was directly supported by the Obama administration through its Syrian support group, the SSG. Everything's got three letters, folks. This is the Pentagon we're talking about here. They met with former Secretary of State John Kerry in 2013. And also, in this article from Breitbart, where they're talking about what she had to say, they interestingly omit John McCain. Do they not want to criticize Mr. Republican anymore? Except that we go back, you know, we talked about him quite a bit here at InfoWars. New American talked about him going back to 2013, 14, 15. All this stuff was happening. McCain made a secret trip to Syria to meet the U.S. military anti-Assad rebels. Remember that? The FSA, the people that now the Kurds, who we're supposed to believe because they're now our allies, have always been our allies. These are the people we trust. They're now saying the FSA that we created is ISIS. And, of course, when John McCain went there, meeting with the Free Syrian Army, giving them support, we were saying they were ISIS, and so was New American years ago. As a matter of fact, at that point in time, even Breitbart was saying it, but now they don't want to. the report said that the Obama administration had delivered weapons, supplies, and CIA-sponsored training to the FSA, the Free Syrian Army. At the time, May 25th, 2013, Rand Paul objected. He offered two amendments to the bill, one that would have forbidden the transfer of weapons to the rebel forces fighting to oust the government of Syria, the regime change. Another one that would have prevented the use of military forces, U.S. military forces in Syria. They rejected both of those amendments. Paul, 6 years ago, Rand Paul said, this is a mistake to arm these guys. These weapons are going to ISIS. That's what Rand Paul said at the time. He said, sometimes it's falling into the hands of ISIS because they're simply taking it from him, or it's maybe given to them. Had a lot of people reporting that it was given to them. Or we mistakenly actually give it to some of the radicals. He said that back in 2013, said Rand Paul. At the time, his foil was not Lindsey Graham, but Lindsey Graham's mentor, John McCain, who praised Obama giving weapons to the FSA, who have now given them to ISIS, just as Rand Paul said 6 years ago. And, you know, when we had that picture and we said, look at this, he's with ISIS. And we said that because we said ISIS is the FSA. We knew it. Rand Paul knew it. Everybody knew it. Snopes puts that picture up. Does this photograph show John McCain with an ISIS leader? No, it shows him with a Free Syrian Army. And they're completely different, right? Except that, you know, 2 years ago in London, remember that attack that happened in London on the London Bridge attack? We had that guy run over people and get out and stab him with a knife. One of the terrorists who carried that out had been part of John McCain's Free Syrian Army in Libya, where we overthrew the Libyan government. Oh, that's well, that had good result, didn't it? His name was Rashid Redouane. And after fighting in the Libyan revolution, then he went to fight in Syria. Just like we transferred weapons via the CIA and so forth from Benghazi, through Benghazi from Libya into Syria, we also transferred the ISIS fighters. Isn't that interesting? The unit fought alongside al-Qaeda extremists in Syria, according to a British newspaper story that says his plea for asylum in the UK was rejected. But he continued living in that country and then eventually ran down a bunch of people and knifed them. And then when it, you know, what about this Free Syrian Army? Well, you know, we were told back in 2014 that the Free Syrian Army, being supported at the time by the Obama administration, was slaughtering Christians in that area. I have seen mainstream media reports about, look at this, these Turks are coming in and they're killing Christians and so forth. This has been going on for a long time, all of those people there. And the press doesn't want to talk about that. Well, I want to talk about Zuckerberg, but we don't have time. And we'll get to that tomorrow, I promise. We got a lot of clips of what happened there, and we'll be talking about Libra as well as free speech and the lies and the hypocrisy that was exhibited yesterday in those hearings. But before we leave, I just want to remind you again, we really do need your support. We've got a great sale. We have the best quality supplements you can find anywhere. Natural, safe, effective, and now 40 to 70% off. Survival Shield X-ray nascent iodine, for example, 70% off. We have things like our all-natural sleep aid knockout, 50% off. Our all-natural anti-inflammatory bod ease, 50% off. We even have 40% off the big purchase of the Alexa Pure Breeze, your air freshener, your filter. Not a freshener, but a filter. Takes out the contaminants in your home. Take a look at InfoWarsStore.com. Free shipping